Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and, of course, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. We love having a very own critic. He does things for other people, too. Anyway, the films are Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always, The Other Lamb, and Mephisto. And I will say that I've already made a story out of it, so we'll just go on to the reviews. Hi, David. How are you?
Okay, Jill. How are you doing this week?
What would you like me to say? Swell.
That was a question.
That was an answer.
I will take it that you're doing splendidly. Well, we are still in this very odd time of sheltering in place and all of that. And movie theaters remain mostly closed. They're certainly all closed in my necks of the woods. So fortunately, there are more and more opportunities to see movies by streaming video, including new movies. There's always plenty of old to look at, but it's really, I'm very pleased with the way that various services have stepped in. One can stream new movies through some movie theaters and through some other outfits, and I'm very happy about this because it's allowing at least some of the new movies, especially, you know, not the huge Hollywood productions so much as the more independent movies, to actually still get some exposure and be available to people everywhere. So anyway, let's do some of those this week. And the first film I would like to talk about is called Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always. Not the easiest title to remember, I've discovered, but a good title. Once you've seen the film, you realize very much what it means. It was written and directed by Eliza Hittman, who is a very gifted filmmaker. She's only made two or three features before this, and she has a talent for very beautifully, closely observed films and very beautifully acted films. And this one is probably her best movie yet, and it's getting a lot of acclaim, and it really deserves that. It's a very serious drama, but it is not heavy. Everything is handled with the lightest of touches. By that, I simply mean that even though the subject matter is not happy, it's not a downer. And it just follows the adventures of two young women, two teenagers, in a very compassionate way. And it has a very strong political point of view and is just beautifully done. So Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always begins and takes place partly in sort of a small town, Pennsylvania, where we have a young woman who is, has a very, her name is Autumn. She has a very ordinary job. She works in a store and she just has a very ordinary life and she has nothing very special about her. And she works alongside her cousin and good friend, Skylar. And then Autumn finds out that she is pregnant. And we never get a backstory on this. We never really find out much about how this happened or who the guy was or why it happened or why they weren't more careful and all. It just, she finds out that she's pregnant and it is very important to her that her mother not find out. She really cannot turn to her family. She can turn to her cousin, Skylar, who is also her closest friend. So what is she going to do? So what she does is she goes off to a clinic somewhere in or near the small town where she lives. And the clinic turns out to be one of these, shall we say, places in disguise. She goes there seeking honest counseling, and what she ends up getting is anti-abortion propaganda. And she really wants to get rid of this pregnancy. She really wants to terminate it. She really wants to have an abortion. But the counseling that she goes for at this little clinic turns out, again, to not be, well, I would call it not real counseling at all. It's basically just propaganda, and it's basically just sort of telling her what to do without quite letting her know that they're telling her what to do. Well, she pretty soon realizes what's going on here. And above, mainly, she recognizes that they're just not going to help her. So she then enlists her cousin, who turns out to be a wonderful, wonderful friend to her. And they manage to put together some money. I won't say exactly how they do that. And they travel to New York City, where she can get some real help at a Planned Parenthood clinic. But there turn out to be various kinds of complications. The clinic in the small town totally misinformed her, and it's pretty clear that this is a lie, telling her that she was not very far along in the pregnancy. When she gets to Planned Parenthood and they just redo the sonogram and so forth, she finds out that she's much farther along than she realized, which means that she can't get the clinic, she can't get the abortion immediately. So now she's going to have to stay overnight in New York and wait until the next day so she can be admitted to the clinic and so forth. And this poses more problems financially and logistically, and what's she going to tell her mother about where she is, and this kind of thing. So basically, that is the story. It is the story of Autumn and her cousin Skylar dealing one step at a time with the situation, with very little money, and trying to get this medical procedure and running into all of these stumbling blocks along the way. And I certainly won't tell how the whole thing turns out. Now, again, this is a story which is very, very dramatic in a very everyday sort of a way. Things like this happen all the time to ordinary people. And this movie does not turn it into melodrama, but it turns into very compelling drama. And what we watch are these two characters played beautifully, beautiful performances by Sidney Flanagan as Autumn and Talia Ryder as Skylar. Just beautifully acted, beautifully done. And again, the movie pays attention to every little detail that comes along the way without ever getting bogged down in those details. It's a movie that seems to float through this small drama in the most elegant and articulate way, keeping it totally involved every step of the way, but never overwhelming you with melodramatic emotions. So I just could not recommend this movie more highly. I completely agree with its politics, but even if you don't, I think you'll find it a very, very just a compelling drama in every way. Eliza Hittman is one of the most gifted filmmakers on the current scene, and I say that without reservation. And I hope she continues to make a lot more movies and to prosper for a lot more years to come. Our second movie for today, The Other Lamb, is also directed by a woman, Małgorzata Szumowska, who is a Polish filmmaker, although this movie is very much in English. It is a movie. It's being pitched as a horror movie, but I wouldn't exactly call it a horror movie. It is more or less of a horror movie, but it's not especially horrific. It's more moody. It's more atmosphere. It's more just a sort of a sense of foreboding and unease that permeates everything. That's what makes it a horror movie. But it's not a movie that thrives a lot on blood and gore and that sort of thing, the way all too many horror movies do. Also, it's about a horror movie sort of a subject. It's about a cult. So what we have here is a movie that takes place in a cult which lives out somewhere in the wilds of England or Ireland. I believe it's Ireland. And it is run by a guy who calls himself the Shepherd, played by Michiel Huisman. And he is, your typical cult leader. He has the beard and he has the portentous language and he obviously runs the place with a very firm hand. And all of the members of his flock are young women. So he's a typical cult leader in that way, too. He's got this whole mess of young women around who believe that he is, in fact, their shepherd, and that they have to follow his every order and obey his every demand and command. And, of course, a lot of those demands and commands are sexual. And that is the situation in which the movie takes place. And what happens is that along well into the story, they have to move to a new place because the cops get after them. So that means that they have to put on their traveling shoes and walk and trudge and go off, wander over the countryside until they find another place that he decides is okay. And along the way, various little mini dramas happen that involve various of the women in the cult. There is not a really strong story through line in this movie. It's more about little things that happen to some of the members of the cult along the way. We pick up little bits of backstory along the way about how they got involved in all of this, about which ones are the important members of the cult and which ones are not. We learn pretty early on that some of them are considered wives and some of them are not considered wives, and there's differences of status among them and so forth and so on. But mainly we have this sort of ominous and unpleasant atmosphere which pervades everything, because we have these young women who appear to be more or less contented with their lot, except when they aren't. And above all, they are under the iron thumb, if that's not mixing a metaphor, of the shepherd. And we learn to not like him very much, very, very early in the story. And there are various foreshadowings of something dire to come, which, of course, eventually does transpire. The Other Lamb is visually compelling, but the language really does weigh it down. And so all through the movie, actually, from beginning to end, I kept thinking, looks spectacular and it's really got me pulled in and I'm completely engrossed in it. However, why do they keep talking like this? And why do they keep using that artificial language and all of that? So it's a movie that I wish it succeeded better than it did. It's one of the better horror movies to come along in a while, even though it's not exactly a horror movie. I wish that the writing were as good as the actual filming of it. That would make it a far more successful movie. And now to talk about one more movie, of all things, I'd like to talk about an older movie, which is streaming right now. One of the wonderful things that's happening at this moment when we have so many movies that are available through internet streaming while the movie theaters are closed is that occasionally one of the older movies that gets revived in movie theaters here and there are also getting onto the web in this way. And I'm very pleased about that. One of the movies which is streaming right now through some theaters is a very fine movie from the middle 1970s by the Italian filmmaker Luchino Visconti called L'Innocente, The Innocent. And it's a wonderful, wonderful movie, very stately, very elegant, visually very sumptuous drama with a wonderful cast led by Giancarlo Giannini and Laura Antonelli, and a terrific, terrific movie. And now another really fascinating movie from bygone times is streaming, in this case courtesy of Kino Lorber, which is a terrific company, which does wonderful work in Blu-ray and DVD and so forth. And there is a restoration of a movie from 1981 called Mephisto, which is, yes, just as devilish as that sounds. Directed by the great Hungarian director István Szabó, and starring a very fine actor, Klaus Maria Brandauer. And again, this is a movie from the early 80s, but oh my gosh, I found it every bit as compelling today as I found it way back in the early 1980s. And it looks really good in the streaming version that I saw, and I really totally recommend it. So Mephisto is based on a novel by Klaus Mann. Klaus Mann was the brother, the less talented brother, of the great Thomas Mann, one of the great novelists of the 20th century. And this is based on a novel by Klaus Mann called Mephisto, which is based very closely on the actual career of a very famous German actor named Gustav Gründgens. And what happened with this famous actor in real life, and this is what happens to the actor in the novel, he is on the rise as an actor in Germany during the time when Hitler is coming to power, and he is he's very much a left winger, he's very much in favor of the Marxists and the communists, but as Hitler comes to power and as Hitler takes more and more command of Germany and environs, our main character of Mephisto starts making compromises, and he makes another compromise and another compromise and another compromise, and before you know it, he is totally in bed with the entire Nazi program. Now, it doesn't happen in a sort of straightforward and as crude a way as I just said, and that's what makes this movie Mephisto so fascinating. It happens bit by bit. It happens little by little. He finds out that if he makes a friend with this person, it will help his career in this way. Then he finds out if he avoids alienating that person with some of his Marxist talk, that can improve a little bit. And then he becomes very well acquainted with a very, very powerful general who is based very powerfully on Hermann Göring of the actual Nazi ruling class, and starts to really make compromises then. And so we have, as little by little, this character who, by the way, becomes famous partly for playing Mephistopheles in Goethe's Faust, playing the devil figure in that, and who gradually comes to realize but will not face the implications of the fact that he is actually the Faust character. He is actually selling his soul to the devil, which is represented by the Nazis. Now, this movie rides primarily on the phenomenal performance of Klaus Maria Brandauer in the leading role. Brandauer is a very, very fine actor, and his performance throughout the movie verges on hysteria, which is very appropriate for the subject matter. And it's a really over-the-top performance that every once in a while seems it's going to topple over into sheer excess, but kept me absolutely involved and engrossed and kind of semi-overwhelmed every step of the way. It's a terrific looking movie. It's a beautifully acted movie. Brandauer gives a phenomenal performance. And above all, it's a reminder of what can happen when you start to make compromises with authoritarian forces. And I that even though America today is nothing like the Nazis of old, it's a lesson that we can still learn to revisiting and learning from to this day. So I think that Mephisto is a movie from the early 80s, and it deals with events of the 1930s, but I think it's very relevant to our situation today, and above all, it's just a terrific movie to watch. So I really recommend traveling back into the past a little bit and having a look at Mephisto. It's streaming, and it's excellent. And that is my somewhat hither and yon story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you. As always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always, The Other Lamb, and Mephisto.